And the
podcast
begins with a song of rebellion.
How can this
podcast
be my life?
CD Burners.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to CD Burners. We are back in business today on the pod. We're talking about a classic pop punk album, Newfound Glory, Sticks and Stones.
We got this bucket of candy that's upstairs in our office.
Is that all you're thinking about?
Well, the thing is like there's Airheads and then there's Laffy Taffy. And Laffy Taffy just shit the bed so fucking hard on flavors. They were like, let's take all the worst flavors and make it into taffy. They're like grape, banana, yeah. Sour apple.
I like the green one, I want to say.
Sour apple.
Yeah.
And then Airheads were like, they probably saw that and they're like, hey, why don't we just do the flavors that are good?
Let's make it good and make it skinny.
Yeah, and so Airheads is just so fucking superior to like...
Airheads are so good. Remember the white one?
Yeah, it's like literally, which is probably just like a mix of every flavor that there was, which is like one of the, it's like such a good, smart marketing technique because it's like, hey, they're like, we got all this trash flavor. Let's just mix it together and call it like
white. Mystery.
Yeah, mystery flavor.
I remember when I was in elementary school, people would take those Airheads and they like pretend it's their tongue, you know?
No, I didn't ever have that.
You
no.
never did that?
No, I didn't have that.
I'm
going to
do that as soon as we get upstairs.
I never had. Oh, I have one right here. I brought it down because I was like, I wonder if I can eat this during the podcast.
Do you want me to show you? Or
well,
do you want to
just
do it?
It's cherry. It's probably will work. Yeah, try it. I think I brought two down.
Isn't this Laffy Taffy? That's not going to work for the tongue.
Oh, yeah, no. Fuck, I messed it up. See, they fucked me. They butt-fucked me with this because they said, like,
look at the... As soon as you pulled it out of your pocket, I was like, that's too fat to be
because it's
head.
Also like, they're like, oh, this looks appetizing. Like, it's like, could be possibly like a pink strawberry like situation, but they're like, they're just fucked. Airheads
are better.
Laffy Taffy's not good. We're talking about Newfound Glory, guys.
Newfound Glory? More like... Old Found Glory. Am I right?
I mean, at this point.
I was pretty drunk at emo night, and I made that joke to JT from Hawthorne Heights. And he was like, yeah, like, we found it already.
That's really funny. Dude, that's exactly, like, his attitude and the way he said it. You like,
we found it.
You kind of really nailed who he is and, like, his reaction. You did a good impersonation of him. You know, it's crazy that the singer of Newfound Glory has directed such films as Pulp Fiction and The Hateful Eight.
He's really world-renowned, and I think he has a thing for feet, too, right?
Yeah, it's super nuts. He's really, really a talented guy.
If you'd missed the joke, guys, we're talking about how Jordan Pundick and Quentin Tarantino are doppelgangers. They look the same.
It's crazy that how much...
Has anybody ever seen them in the same room?
Honestly, and also, I'm sure there's somebody's brought this up.
We made a meme about it. On the Emo Night account years and years ago.
I'm sure that somebody has told that to at least Jordan, but I wonder if anybody's ever told it to Quentin Tarantino, because he'll be like, I wonder if he would be like, what?
Who?
What are you like, talking what about? What the fuck are you talking? What are you talking about?
Is that your Quentin impression?
Yeah, except it has a lot more racial slurs in it when I do my Quentin Tarantino episode. This band, I'm afraid to fuck around with it.
Why is that?
Because this was one of the bands that, this is actually one of the albums that I had. Like, I had this album, I had the CD, I had the CD booklet. I remember, like, laying on my floor, opening it up, and, like, reading all of this shit. Like, this is one of those albums. So it was a really, really important album to me. And it's also, like, a really influential album. I think the band in general is really influential.
Absolutely.
So I don't want to fuck anything up.
They're definitely like the forefathers of pop punk. They're up there. I think they were definitely part of that mainstream pop punk explosion. They kind of led the charge. Obviously, you have the pioneers like Blink and Green Day who kind of like broke through first. But as far as like breaking into mainstream popular culture and, you know, their first EP that they did with Drive Thru Records was like covers of songs from movies.
Yeah.
They were like ingrained in pop culture. They were every 2000s teen movie soundtrack. Like they sounded like everybody's teen years from that time.
It's a really great way to describe them, you know, in pop culture. But I also think the thing that for me that was really important with them was they bridged the gap for me to like punk. Like it was almost there, but it wasn't there. So I couldn't have just gone from like, I don't know, Nirvana to like The Exploited, right?
Sure.
So I needed that like stepping stone to go from those things and Newfound Glory like was that stepping stone for me because it was like palatable punk, right?
Sure.
And that's kind of where it came from. Like, it's kind of like where it came from. I have a lot to say about it, but I want you to go because I'll start.
Yeah, I'll say some of the main just facts, get them out of the way.
Get some
facts out of
the way. And then
we'll get into the meat of this. This is the third full-length album from Newfound Glory. It came out June 11th, 2002 on MCA Records.
Dude.
So it's their second full-length on a major label.
Dude, the 2002, good year, where you could literally just go and buy a bag. You didn't have to worry if anything was in it. You could just go and fall asleep in your
car. I was
car.
Like fucking 11, dude.
You could just go and buy a bag and just nod out in your car in the desert. I think that year I actually, me and my friend Connor drank a bottle of vodka and fell asleep in the desert and got fourth degree sunburn on us, fourth degree burns on us.
Oh, God.
This is the good old days. This newfound listening.
You know what would be funny is if we found a picture of you from 2002 and then side-by-sided it with me from 2002, because I'm still very much like a dorky preteen in 2002.
I have my yearbook photo.
I'm in sixth grade at the time.
Yeah, I have my
so, like,
junior year.
It would be funny because it's like there was a meme going around a couple of years ago that was like for couples, and it was like, oh, I wish I met you earlier in life. And then it would show like him in high school and then like her the same year and like, or vice versa. They would just be like totally opposite people. I feel like that's how it would be if we juxtapose like your picture, like being a cool guy.
It wasn't cool.
You were
then.
A cool guy. You were like in the peak of your teen years.
Yeah, it was cool for me.
I was literally
terrible for everybody else around me.
I had glasses and a buzz cut, and I was in the sixth grade. Like,
yeah, I mean, to me now, looking back, that's cool. If they did if I was just thinking, it's like, what was that meme? It's like if you met. What was it? If you like met?
I wish I met you earlier in life or something like that.
Dude, I mean, like, if for all of my friends and ex girlfriends, everybody would be like a sperm. like that. It would be like me like graduating high school and then everybody's just like not alive yet.
Yeah.
That's what mine would be.
It charted at number 4 on the Billboard 200, which is crazy. Sold 91,000 copies in the first week. Bayside sold 50,000 copies total.
Dude, yeah, that's crazy.
It went platinum in 2020. So it took a while, but platinum's big. Platinum's the big one. That's the basics. That's a basic rundown of Sticks and Stones. Those are the simple facts. 2002, third full-length album.
I don't think that if you played in a band and you grew up around this time, I don't think that there was a riff that was played more than Hit or Miss in like a practice spot. We had this old practice spot called Pennington. I don't know if it's still there in Tucson, Arizona. And you could just walk down the halls and hear every fucking room playing. And I think the reason why is like, I mean, they just somehow managed to take those four chords and do it in a way that like hadn't, they just like nailed it. You know what I mean? It was like the Smells Like Teen Spirit of pop punk.
You know, they thought that the album was done. And then they wrote My Friends Over You. Did you hear this story? They were out at the movie theater just kind of celebrating, being like, yeah, we did it. Sticks and Stones is complete. They were waiting in line for popcorn, and Chad just starts like singing the opening riff to My Friends Over You. And it gets stuck in his head and he makes like the other band member that he's with like start doing like beatbox drums. And then they go and they watch the movie. And he said the whole movie he couldn't even focus because he was just like, I have to remember that riff. I have to remember that riff. And he just like kept singing it in his head over and over, couldn't focus on the movie at all. Went back to the studio and finished that song. And that's like the biggest song off the album.
I wonder what movie it was.
It was Freddy Got Fingered or something like that.
Awesome. Yeah. Great movie. Dude, I went to war on the internet the other day about Freddy Got Fingered.
Really?
Yeah. Some fucking asshole idiot, like some fucking guy was like, I forgot what band it was, but it was a band that I really like. And they're like, album sucks, blah, blah, blah. And I just tweeted, you know, they don't make statues out of critics, like underneath it. And then he put a picture of like Robert Ebert or one of those guys like under it. And I was like, yeah, dude, this guy thought Freddy Got Fingered sucked. You suck. This guy sucks. Point not taken. Fuck you. Like, you're a fucking idiot. You know, it was, anyway, I went to war over Freddy Got Fingered on the internet yesterday, or like a couple days
nice.
Ago. Think about Newfound Glory. Are they from Florida?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, they're from Florida. And then they moved to San Diego, which is a really funny thing because they moved to San Diego and like all bought houses in like Temecula, which is...
That was like, I think that was a little bit later.
I know, and it's really funny because like they kind of did the same trajectory that I did. I was like, well, I'm moving to L.A., I'll get a place in Van Nuys that has like an LA area code.
From what I heard, the label moved them to San Diego. They put them in housing in La Jolla.
Bird Rock Bandits. Do you know about the Bird Rock Bandits?
No, what's that?
La Jolla is like a really like, I think, wealthy area of, I think it's on the way to San Diego, but there's this, there's like a dateline on it. And there was this gang. And when I say gang, I mean it was like a couple like really, really wealthy kids that called themselves like the Bird Rock Bandits. And they bullied some fucking kid, like knocked him out or pushed him or like punched him. And it was one of the first cases where like somebody hit their head on the sidewalk and died. And it was like, yeah. And that's the like legitimately what I know about La Jolla. La Jolla, Bird Rock Bandits. Yeah, I bet it's either like a 60 Minutes or like a fucking, one of those Dateline about the Bird Rock Bandits. Like, I don't retain zero information and I can remember that shit. Like, that, it's the fucking...
So random.
Yeah, it's really strange, the things that stuck with me. But the thing about Newfound Glory was, like, they all liked different shit. They all liked different stuff. And Chad from Newfound Glory was in a hardcore band that all of my friends really liked called Shai Hulud. And this is where I don't want to mess it up, because... If you think emo Twitter is annoying,
hardcore Twitter is worse.
Wait till you fucking start getting hardcore Twitter algorithm. I know it's not everybody in hardcore. I like hardcore. I like a lot of it. But some of you are insufferable fucking idiots.
How can this nightmare be my life?
Dude, some of you guys just shut. It's not worth it. Just stop arguing about moshing. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Shut up. If your mom saw you tweeting about moshing, shut up. But the, like, it's so fucking annoying. Dude, I like hate follow like a couple of people that strictly are on hardcore Twitter. But look, it's neither here nor there. I don't care. You guys can fucking make fun of me all you want. Nothing you can say can hurt my feelings. But Chad was like a hardcore guy. And, you know, that it was straight edge, like all these like straight edge hardcore. These guys were like influenced by, like, his first show was a Fugazi show, which is awesome. What a cool first show to go to. He kind of like had similar shit. Like, he went straight to like metal. Like, which is what I did when I was like, oh, music exists. I like metal. And that's when I got into hardcore. And then that's when I got into, then after that, it was like, you know, Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins. And then I went back and reverse. So I like all this shit. I kind of like, and again, all around the same age. And this was around the time where like my friends were in hardcore bands. So I thought it was really cool. Like, I thought that was really cool. And that's when I got into it. Like, all my friends, like the scary, like, chug chug fucking like terror and all the stuff that like I like, but I don't listen to it on like daily, but there's times where I'll go back and listen to it. Chad really liked that stuff. And so Newfound Glory was actually the side project for him
From Shai Hulud. People love Shai Hulud.
People love Shai. I mean, Shai Hulud is good. And so that's the thing is like, so they had this, they had like kind of a hardcore bass a little bit. Like, but they were playing this music that did not really sound like it. But if you kind of took it apart, they did, Newfound Glory did a really interesting thing, which is, you know, who knows if they'll get the credit for it. I'm sure there's a band that did it before and everybody would be like, oh, they did it first. But like, they brought like kind of the hardcore breakdown of the like halftime breakdown of a chorus or like parts and songs into like pop punk. Like they did it a lot. And that was like a really big influence from the hardcore scene.
The thing that I noticed while we're on that same sort of tip is like, it's interesting that we did these albums out of order, right? Like we listened to A Day to Remember first, which is like the obvious evolution from Newfound Glory. And I kind of wish that we did this first, but now I like listen to Newfound Glory and I'm like, oh, it feels like something's missing because A Day to Remember took what Newfound Glory was doing and evolved it to that next level. So I listen to Newfound Glory now and I'm like, it's not dynamic enough. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have like mm-hmm. those breakdowns. It doesn't, it's all one level pop punk. And that comes from punk.
Yeah.
You know, I can see where A Day to Remember took what Newfound Glory was doing and expanded upon it. And I'm much more appreciative of A Day to Remember. And I can look at this with a different lens.
And now think about Neck Deep.
Yeah.
Like Neck, like that is like, they, Neck Deep is like our generation's Newfound Glory. Like they just made it a little bit more dynamic. But like at the time, like this was really, you know, it got a bad rap. Like Newfound Glory like wasn't cool to like.
Sure.
It was like.
Because it was too pop for punk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at the time, nobody was like into pop punk yet. Like it hadn't exploded as much.
It was like, so it's kind of what I liked. I liked it because I felt like this was, you know, to parents, this is like, oh, that's punk. They're listening to punk. And really it's like, no, dude, this was like prime time work at the mall.
Yeah.
Be friends with people that work at the mall with you. Stay after and go drink 40s with your friends that you work at the mall with and, you know, like steal shit from Hot Topic situation. Like this was like very peak formative finding out what I like. And, you know, one of the big reasons that like we might, you know, I might even be doing this podcast right now, which is Newfound Glory was a big part of that. It was a really, really big part of that for me. And that's why I like, I don't want to fuck this up because I want to do the right thing for this band, because I understand what you're saying. It's like you're listening to Day to Remember and you're like, shit, this is all over the place. It's got like song structure. And
I mean, we're 20 years past it at this point too. A Day to Remember is sort of the next evolution. But I don't, you know, I don't think A Day to Remember would exist without Newfound Glory.
Dude, I have some cool facts. Like Amy Fidler?
Yeah.
Like the lady that like, I think did Fidler Records.
Yeah.
Like booked a show with They Didn't Have a Name.
Mm-hmm.
They got their name. There's another reason why I like them. Got their name from a fucking Get Up Kids song.
Yeah.
Which is what I like. That was like my shit. Like this is all like and then my
there's
shit.
There's so many bands who are named after Newfound Glory songs. Yeah. All Time Low. Who else did I write
the story
down?
So
story
far.
So far.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I mean, and remember when we were talking about A Day to Remember and everybody was talking about easycore and shit?
Yeah.
They invented easycore. I mean, yeah. Which is, you know, I didn't think about it at the time, but it's just the opposite of hardcore.
Well, then
I didn't even put that together.
Then there was Fall Out Boy had softcore.
they called it
softcore, and then it was the same sort of joke, but they did have like easycore.
Those guys, you know, like it kind of goes with like the straight edge situation here.
Yeah.
You know, which is like obviously that was not me, but I've still friends from high school that are straight edge now. My friend Bo Brady, who's a tattoo artist, and he was like this, he was fucking probably as skinny as me, like really lanky. And we used to just like fucking like lock him in his bedroom and like bully him and shit. And he is huge.
He's jacked now?
So jacked, so sweet, and like so awesome. And he's still straight edge from when. So if you guys, there's a tattoo artist named Bo Brady, and if you guys are around and getting tattooed from him, he's really good. He's been doing it for a long time. But he's huge and scary and cool now. And I remember he hit me with his car going like 20 miles an hour. And well, like, it was I got hit by a car, like cartoon hit by a car in a Walmart parking lot. Uh-huh. Like I just went, whoop. like over it.
Oh God.
And nothing was wrong. Nothing was wrong. It was like, it hit me perfectly.
To be young again.
I know. I can't
fuck
imagine.
Fuck you up now.
Fucking kill me now. But they are all, the thing about New Found Glory is they're all influenced by different shit. They're all influenced by different stuff. Like Jordan really liked more along the lines of what I like Texas Is the Reason and The Promise Ring and Get Up Kids. Ian, like that West Coast punk, like Lagwagon and No Use for a Name, Unwritten Law, No Effects, which has been a big influence on like a lot of the bands that we've been covering lately. Cyrus liked radio rock, like alternative radio rock.
But the one thing they had in common was that they all fucking loved Blink 182.
Who doesn't?
And that was what really exploded their careers. Mark Hoppus, the man himself, we've talked about it before. He spotted Simple Plan. He brought them up with him. He donated his talents to their album. New Found Glory was taken under the wings of Blink's whole team. They were picked up by Blink's management company, Rob DeVoe. They were signed to Blink's label, MCA. They were moved out to San Diego to be a part of what was happening here in Southern California. They owe a lot to Blink 182. And you know who else they owe a lot to?
Who?
Gabe Saporta.
Get the fuck out of here.
All roads lead back to Gabe Saporta.
They always do.
It's crazy. So the reason that New Found Glory got signed to Drive Thru Records is because of Gabe Saporta. He was standing out in the snow playing the song Nothing Gold to Stephanie from Drive Thru and just singing along to it. And he's like, you guys got to sign this. You got to sign this. You got to sign this. And sure enough, they were like, yeah, let's sign it. And the next thing you know, they put out that EP of movie soundtrack songs.
I've been talking to Gabe a lot lately about my dick stuff. Uh-huh. Like, him and I are just like, you know, old Jewy guys, you know? Like,
sure.
Fucking just being like, our medical problem. You know what I mean? It kind of, and doing this and you saying Drive Thru Records reminded me, I'm sure I've told this story before. It doesn't, like, I'll do a really, really short version of it. But, you know, I was in a band called Table for One in Tucson, Arizona, and Drive Thru Records somehow got a hold of our shit. They were like, come to California, let's listen to it. And this was the trip where the singer of that band diarrheaed himself while driving.
Oh, okay.
So I think that was the same trip. But we go there.
I thought you were the singer of the band.
No, he was the singer of the band.
What did you do?
I played bass. It's like the instrument you play when you're like not really good at one thing. You know, it's like the thing where you're just like,
I want to be in a band.
Yeah. You don't have to be good.
Yeah.
Like there's like two good bass players in the world and the rest of them are just like,
just hold it down.
Yeah. We go there and all I knew that was that Drive Thru was like my
dream,
the golden goose for me. And so we get there, they show us around the fucking place. They show us I've never been to LA, I don't think. Or maybe I was in LA once before, like Annie Walters, Tequila situation. So they take us into their like merch, you know, the warehouse, and they're like, take anything you want, take anything you want. This is the first time I've ever experienced anything like that. So I've heard stories now, like later in life about the people that own Drive Thru Records. His name is Richard, and then
Stephanie.
And I remember her being really, really nice. I remember him being really, really nice to me. But when we were leaving, I remember Richard being like, you should stay here with spend the night at my house. Like to me only.
Mm.
And I was like, I think I'm okay. You know what I mean? And like, it was really like, I'll get like glimpses of like the past, and especially now doing all of this research shit. And I think what happened was like, kind of turns out that that's the kind of guy he was. And so I was this close to getting essayed by him, but I would have probably taken it at the time for a record deal. The thing is that during that period, he was like, you know, we've got, I'm sure I've told this on here or some radio shit I've done before, but like, they were like, you know, it's between you and like this other band. And then the other band happened to be something corporate. And I was blown away when he played that record for us. So, I mean, keep in mind, this was 20-ish years ago.
Did you walk on his back?
Yeah, I think so.
That's like the main thing that he did.
Yeah, I think so. I think that that's, I think I did do all that shit.
Yeah. I don't know. You can look into the creepiness of Richard.
Dude, I hope that more of this comes back to me. Like, yeah. I hope more of it comes back
Maybe
to me.
Maybe you're repressing.
I might be. Honestly, like, I might be. Maybe it is the reason why I am the way that I am. Dude, I can't believe the Newfound Glory CD Burners episode.
Who needs therapy?
Unleashed an entire thing in me. Anyway, back to Newfound Glory. Peak 2002. Pop punk hitting mainstream. I read somewhere they met at Red Lobster. Which,
I don't, really? That's crazy.
I don't know. Like, are they like somebody, like...
They do like talk about chain restaurants and stuff. Yeah. I mean, like very like suburbia. Like, I think that was part of like what made it relatable to... Mm-hmm. Teens, you're like, we have a fucking Red Lobster.
Yeah, we know what that is. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's like, I agree. Because you can like actually listen to music that's like a little bit on the alternative, like punk side. And they're talking about things that you know. And I think that that's what like really grabbed you. And same thing with like Blink, you know?
Yeah.
Like that was same situation. That's like why suburban kids fucking flocked to this shit. That's why I did.
Yeah.
You know, they made it safe for me to... listen to music that was rooted in hardcore and punk. Cool. To me, at least. I don't want to do Newfound Glory any injustice at all. You know, album was big for me because of my hardcore and metalcore, which now I like, I never liked calling it metalcore, but like, I guess there is some of that stuff.
Looking back on it,
it was an easy transition for me to move into liking pop punk. I think a lot of people felt that way because it made it possible with breakdowns. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've already talked about this shit. You know, they even said that they wanted to have this album have the mix of New York City hardcore with West Coast punk rock. And if you look at it from a bird's eye view, they did that.
They did a good job. And being from Florida, it's interesting that those were their two influences. You know, like, we didn't have the internet back then, so they were tapped in. They were very tapped in, like you said. Like, they all had strong interests. They played in other bands. They knew what the fuck was going on. And I think they, too, saw a moment here where pop punk was about to explode. And they made this record. This was their third one. I mean, they were... From the beginning, like, I think they knew something was happening.
You know who they made it with?
I do.
Yes. Should we get him on again?
Liner notes here. Neil Avron, our man, our friend of the pod. He also produced Fall Out Boy from Under the Cork Tree. We interviewed him for that episode. They recorded this at Signature Sound Studios in San Diego, Larrabee West in WeHo, and NRG Studios in North Hollywood. Other interesting liner notes, Mark Hoppus played bass on the song Something I Call Personality. He was actually brought in to track vocals, but ended up playing the bass because the bassist couldn't do that riff, that line.
You have to be pretty bad at bass to not be able to play. Like, you have to be, like, pretty bad at bass if, like, Mark sits in for you.
Matt Skiba and Dan Rio from Alkaline Trio do guest vox on Forget My Name. And you know, I saw a really interesting name in here. It's not going to really mean anything to anybody else, but Chris Georgian has a background vocal on there. Do you know who Chris Georgian is?
I've heard you say it, I feel like, or I know it. I know it.
He's in our inbox. So Chris Georgian, I don't know what his title was at the time, but he worked for Rick DeVoe Management. He's music industry. He obviously has been around for a long time. This is 2002. So he's probably like just starting his career. I actually don't even know his age, but I feel like he's definitely not where he is now. Chris Georgian is actually the reason we got Mark Hoppus to do Emo Night the very first time.
Dude, all roads lead back to Mark Hoppus.
We reached out to Chris Georgian and he was the one who made it happen. That's crazy, right?
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
It's a wild thing.
But it's funny that he has a background vocal credit on this.
On what? What's on?
I don't know. I don't have the CD down here.
I mean...
keep forgetting to bring the CDs down to the studio.
It's okay. We get the CDs for you guys. I mean,
they're upstairs.
Yeah, we just don't do it for you. It's like a one...
It's supposed to be about the CDs. Yeah, they're all upstairs.
I know. I listened to a couple of reviews of this album that I didn't think were good. You know, a lot of it was like, it's generic pop punk. And I'm like, yeah, bitch, this was the fucking blueprint.
It defined it.
Like, I was like, this is the fuck, this is...
They created it.
Yeah. Like, this is that thing. So it's like, if you want to know, if you're younger and you're listening to this and you want to, like, know where state champs came from, if you want to know, like, where the Stories of Four came from, where you want to know where Neck Deep came from, like, all of those bands, like, go back and listen to this album in full. And while, you know, while it might not be as dynamic as those albums sound now, because we're in a different place and they're different people, this was like the punk and drublick for like our generation's pop punk people.
100%. You know? This is the foundation that everything else is built upon.
Which is, I mean, and that's why I didn't want to do the album Injustice. Cause like, you know, there's like, I like every song on this album. Like I like this album.
What
I
are
like,
some of your standouts?
Oh God, did I even do that? I don't even know if I did that. Oh, Something I Call Personality. Because
the one with Mark playing bass.
Yeah. The one with Mark playing bass, and like you can really hear like where you can hear Neck Deep in it, like you really hear Neck Deep in that one. And then Forget My Name, which is exactly like if you go and listen to that song, you're this is like the type of pop punk where I'm like, that is pop punk. I'm like, there it is.
I liked the joke skits on the end of this album. There's a whole track on this where they're just like fucking around and joking around, and I think in general that kind of goes back to what we talked about, like them meeting or at Red Lobster or like, you know, just like kind of being goofy guys. Like they put their personality into the records and they put themselves out there. They felt like they were your friends.
I guess that is probably why I felt this way, that way, like so strongly about this album when it came out. Cause I was like, yeah, I feel like I could fuck around with these guys.
My other standouts are just like the fucking basics, dude. Like I My Friends Over You is awesome. Sunny, I liked Sunny. That's a cool song.
A lot of people really like their album before this.
Yeah.
More.
Yeah.
But I think the longer we get away from that album, I think people are starting to realize that, like, you know, this one is just as good, if not better. I mean, it just depends on where you're at, right? Like, it just depends on, like, where you picked up on them. I love the album before this one a little bit more than this one. But it doesn't discount that, like, this album was still a very big part of my growth into this scene.
And then the album after this is great, too. Catalyst, great.
People really fucking love that album.
Yeah.
Kind of fell off. They're, like, they have a billion albums.
Yeah, they're very prolific.
10 albums or something. Right? Yeah. Like, it's fucking crazy. Like, they just kept going. They are another band that, like, didn't really stop.
You kind of mentioned it already, but if you like this, you might like...
I picked a different one. What did I say?
You said State Champs.
Oh,
you said...
I picked a different one for you guys, because I don't know if a lot of people, like, know this band. It's like, you know, it's like one of the ones where you, like, it gets thrown around every once in a while, and Saves the Day gets kind of... Like, they said that they kind of ripped off this album, which, like, pains me to say, like, if you listen to these side-by-side, Cancel It Down in this album, like, kind of, but a band called Lifetime. There's a band called Lifetime. I think you guys...
Old school.
You know, and that's, like, that's kind of where I was
Lifetime
at.
Was hugely influential for a lot of people.
I loved Lifetime.
Yeah.
Like, I still do love Lifetime. But then what happened was they just, like...
They took off.
They just fucking...
They took over that whole scene.
They managed to just fucking wreck it.
I picked a new one.
Who?
Chunk No Captain Chunk.
It's another band I never listened to.
They're newish.
I know, it's a band I've never listened to.
You should check them out. They're really sick.
Well, I mean, they should change their name and then I'll check them out.
I really like them. I wish they came to the U.S. more. They're UK guys.
That's probably why I never fucking got into it. Yeah. I don't listen to that. I don't consider those people. I don't consider those
people with accents.
Real people.
Oh, they're French. Yeah, they're French guys.
Even worse. You know? Like, even worse.
What else you got to say? Because we got to wrap this bitch up.
Let me see if I did get any Reddit.
And I want to make sure you get everything that you wanted to say.
Okay, all right. I have a couple Reddit things. Let me just make sure. Okay, people on Reddit, because I think Reddit's a really great... Some of it is a shithole, you know? It's a cesspool of idiots, but... Some of them, you know, if you're on these, like, specific bands or albums or things, people are really insightful. And so, and if I remember correctly, Fall Out Boy recorded take this to your grave as a call to arms in terms of their contribution to the genre after hearing Sticks and Stones. During the summer of 2002, when this was released, I was much more excited by the evolving state of the genre and new stuff being put out, like Tell All Your Friends, Say It Like You Mean It, Living Well Is the Best Revenge. Depends on what metrics you're using for better, but I agree that Sticks and Stones is probably the most perfect execution of that kind of style of early 2000s pop punk. Here's the thing about Sticks and Stones. The songs are all amazing compared to self-titled. I feel like Sticks and Stones has a weaker production. The distortion on the guitars is turned down a bit compared to the self-titled, which make the songs sound poppier. That is my only gripe with Sticks and Stones. Self-titled sounds harder. It had the perfect balance of total poppy vocals and hard guitars and drums. Sticks and Stones just sounds a bit tad too poppy. I wish they would have recorded the guitars a tad harder. Otherwise, it's a perfect album. And I wonder what we can hear, you know, because when you're on these like specific Reddit sites, they're like really listening. But I think that that's what made this album so like more mass appeal, because it was, they're looking at it as a personal thing, being like, I like this because it was like this, and that's more of the things that I like.
Sure.
When you kind of take that away and you go, but this is what everybody else likes.
Yeah, make it sound like a teen movie.
Yeah. It is wild that you say that. Like, this was the era where like every fucking like messed song was in like 10 Things I Hate About You, like shit. Yeah. Like that, which is really... It was really telling about how in pop culture it was.
Absolutely.
I think that's all I have.
We got Jordan waiting in the wings for an interview.
Do we really?
Yep.
Fuck.
So we're going to talk to Quentin Tarantino himself, Jordan Pundik.
He's awesome, dude. I got to get a tattoo by him.
Get tatted up.
I'm going to get tattooed
get
by him.
Get yatted up by Jordan.
I'm going to let him do whatever he wants. I wonder how many like Newfound Glory tattoos he does.
He might not do any.
I bet he does.
I bet he doesn't.
Let's ask him.
I bet that's a rule.
No, dude, you want to get a Newfound
Glory. Pat from Movements has a rule. No. I don't do tattoos from my band.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think if you grew up listening to Newfound Glory and you got a Newfound Glory tattoo from the dude that sang from Newfound Glory, that's a cool thing. But what do I know?
We found it.
All right, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. You look like $1 million, dude.
Thanks, man. Trying, you know.
I know. I gave myself a haircut this morning.
You did?
Yeah, I did it. Have you ever, you know, when you like get a haircut and you're like, this is bad, I'm just gonna do it myself. And then that's what I did. And now I was just like, it's hot and there's hair all over my goddamn apartment, you know? So kind of is what it is.
Yeah.
What's up with you?
Nothing. It feels good to be back in America. I was in Florida for like 3 weeks. So it feels good to be back home, you know?
Yeah. No, I do, dude. Was it fucking swampy and weird out there?
Yeah. It was terrible.
Feels like you are constantly like in a shower or like in a steam room.
You feel like you have to shower like 3 times.
It's disgusting, dude.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that's where you guys are from, though, huh?
Yeah, from there originally. And then I actually moved to San Diego like in 2000, 2001-ish when we were recording.
Yeah, we did our research.
You like how I like perfectly like framed it. So because we're going to talk about this a little bit, right? You know, so.
Dude, don't worry. We did our research. We're not coming in here. We're not coming in here blind, dude. but yeah, dude, that's kind of what we started this podcast because we were like, all right, well, let's find out, you know, they're not like reviews of the albums and, you know, there's only so much shit you can find out online. And we like all of this shit so much. We're like, I wonder what it was like at the time, what it was like for these artists, what it was like for the people that were behind the scenes of producers and their friends and all this shit. So it's like, TJ, would you like to introduce Jordan?
Okay.
Guys, Jordan from Newfound Glory is on the pod. Jordan, thank you so much for being here on
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Morgan, before we jump into everything, can you turn up your mic maybe just a little bit?
Mine?
No, Morgan's.
Oh.
You sound good, Jordan.
What about now? Am I good now?
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's go. Dude, so It is very good to see you. We've been looking forward to doing this for a while. And I think that, you know, now we're actually in the groove of talking to people. When we first started, we were like, how do we do this? You know, like, how do we fucking do this shit? But, you know, this podcast is about sticks and stones. And it was very rare for me. I played in a lot of bands growing up, and there's an old practice space in Tucson, Arizona called Pennington. And it was very rare that I would walk down, you know, those aisles of those practice spaces without hearing, you know, anybody like playing, like everybody was playing the chords to My Friends Over You. Like, it's just like, that's what we were doing. That's like what it was like, you know, for me. I just wanted to, if you could, you know, give us a little flashback to what you were like personally, like where your head was at, where the band was at, and where you saw the world was at the time when the album came out.
Man, so we were all still, so we're coming off of the self-titled record. Things are like really great and fun, and we're like touring in our van, and we're like doing all the things. And then we get home and we're like, okay, like what's the next thing? Like, what's the next step? You know, at this point we were already managed by Rick DeVoe, who managed Blink also. And he's like, you guys got to come to California and record. So we're like, what? No way, dude. Like, never. And so after figuring out when that was going to be and all that stuff, we finally like decided like, okay, like this is what we have to do. We were all still living at home, by the way. I was living with my mom and my dad, and it, you know, everyone was just living with their parents. And it's funny because I'm speaking to you now and like thinking about it, like having a record on a major label and then like living with my mom still, like it was kind of weird.
Were your parents weirded out at this? Like, were, you know, at the time, were they like, this is not something that we want? Did they want you to go to college and do all that type of shit?
Yeah, at first, but then once they kind of saw that we were really putting ourselves out there and really like doing it, it was kind of like, okay, at least with my parents, and Chad's mom too. Chad's mom was pretty, pretty supportive from the beginning, but also Chad was doing his other band at the time too. You know, Shai Hulud was also playing a lot and touring and stuff. So she was kind of used to it already, but my parents weren't, neither was any of the other guys' parents. So, but as they saw us keep doing it and like playing shows and like people coming to see us play, they're like, wow, like these guys might have something here, you know? And they kind of supported us after, you know, they would come to the shows and stuff. And especially if it was like locally, but, yeah, man, we just like moved to California. We all lived in San Diego, in corporate housing in La Jolla, and, the record label paid for it. And we recorded in this little studio called Signature Sound Studios. And the only reason we knew about it was because Blink had recorded their records there. And it was this little tiny one room, one tracking room, did everything there. And, yeah, man, I ended up staying. Cause I fell like in love with the area. And, Rick our manager at the time was like a big time, like surfer dude. So he like taught me how to surf and stuff. And so I like just fell in love with that. So
dude, two things. Yes. Have you heard of the Bird Rock Bandits?
The Bird Rock Band? I feel like I've seen the flyers, like their flyers.
No. Okay, so this is the thing. I literally, like, this is one of these hotel room nights. I was watching, like, one of those, like, 24-hour crime shows or whatever the fuck. And this is a side note, but there was these, in La Jolla, there were these, like, group of, like, wealthy kids that were, like, a gang or whatever. And there's not a lot of crime down there. And
is that a band?
No, it's not a band. It was just like a fucking, it was just these fucking kids that like, dude, it was just like these like kids that like, it might have been a band after this thing had happened, but they ended up like just getting in a fight with a kid and like knocking this kid down. And I think it was like one of the first cases where like somebody hit their head on the ground and they were like, that guy did. And anyway, it was the only thing I really know about La Jolla. Okay. That's it. I just didn't know if that was like a well-known thing down there. I don't retain any information whatsoever. And for some reason along the lines, like that is what has stuck with me. Second, your like headspace, like during this time, where were you at? Like personally, like were you fucking, Is this like an exciting? Were you scared? Were you like, shit, this is what I want to do?
I think it was a combination of all that stuff. I was excited to like get the hell out of Florida for one. I was excited to like just be in a new environment because every time we'd come here and like, you know, we'd tour in the van and we'd come to California all the time and play in LA and San Diego and that kind of stuff. And always like love being here. I don't know. It all feels like it happened so quickly. Like all that stuff was like such a blur, you know, and thinking back on it, it's like, man, we really like did the damn thing. Like we like said we were going to do it and we did it and we came out here and we recorded a record. We didn't think it was going to be anything that it turned into, you know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. and it's just like mind blowing to me, you know, to still think about it. I don't know.
So, in our research, we read
Dude,
that
get closer to the mic.
In our research, we read that you, they basically like sent a bus out to Florida for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it like a coach bus or
it was they sent a tour bus out and we basically like, cause we were all living at home. We only had our shit in our bedrooms. Right. So like we all just boxed up our stuff in our mom's and dad's parents and our parents' houses and like put our shit underneath the bus. And then we all just took a bus out this way.
And you guys made this album with, Neil Avron. That's correct.
Neil Avron. Yeah.
We talked to Neil a couple episodes ago about his work on From Under the Cork Tree. Really incredible guy. We loved having him on the podcast. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like working with Neil on this record? Any challenges?
Where the hell did you go, Tej?
He's gone.
Did I freeze or something?
I don't know. He's gone. But your mic also sounds bad.
He's back.
I was just asking about Neil Avron, what it was like in the studio with him making this album, sort of how he pushed you guys, anything that he sort of brought to the table on this album that you guys hadn't experienced before.
He was always the kind of producer that would definitely push us when we were writing the songs. In the studio or like prior to the studio, we would think that we'd be like, all right, man, yeah, we got it locked in. And then we would go to record and be like, can we try it in this? Can we try something else? And then everyone would be like, you know, we like thought we had it or whatever. And I really love that about Neil, that he just like pushed us to not, his whole thing was like, we don't want it to sound like the last record. Right. And that's something that we've always tried to take with us, you know, as much as we try, you know, we try to. And I think that is like what I love about Neil so much is that he just pushes. And I really appreciate that. And I think we've taken that, what we've learned from him all throughout these years. And especially with like, you know, we've done a lot of records without him too, but we always had him in the back of our minds, you know, like, is this like the best it can be kind of thing.
Dude, I read somewhere that Fall Out Boy was incredible. Like for when they went in to record From Under the Cork Tree was like incredibly inspired by this album mm-hmm. and you guys. And like, which is, you know, and they did it with him. We, you know, we had the pleasure to talk to that dude and it's weird talking to producers as opposed to talking to bands. Cause yeah. they're so technical about yeah. shit where I'm just like, no, but tell me about like, how'd you feel? And they're like, well, I mean, it sounded great. This is what I wanted it to sound. And I'm like, but how'd you feel about it, dude?
Well, I mean, we used this microphone on this snare sound, you know,
yeah. dude, are there any like, you
well,
know,
I turned up the 3D 3D 3LL 3331. And that's what made it sad. Snare drum sound so nice.
Yeah. And I'm just like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? But he is a really sweet dude. I like, I don't yeah. know. And I, you know, there was also, some things that I, you know, that nobody would know about the album from just listening to it, unless you guys spoke about it, where it was like, you guys had fun with it. And some of you guys played instruments on some albums and some songs, and some of you guys played a snare on some shit. And like, that's to me that like, that's what it when I was, you know, growing up and playing in bands, that was like the stuff that we would talk about, like, and within ourselves and be like, yeah. that is a cool thing that we did, and nobody would know that. And that's what made it the thing so special. And like, was there any, you know, when you guys were recording that, were there any like special moments that you remember particularly from the studio?
There was a good amount of cool things that happened during that time. I mean, I think that for us, like the best times at the studio was when our friends would come and hang out, like dudes from other bands or whatever. And I think that was probably my favorite, was when we had our friends come and add their little things to it. Like we had the Bane guys come and do gang vocals, and we had Toby do a yo or whatever he did. Mm-hmm. Or let's go or whatever. And we had like, you know, just friends. We had the Skiba and Dan come and like do a little part. And that was like, for me, the best times, because even though it's these little snippets of like these people that were in our lives on that record, like it was more about like everyone just, when we would just hang out, like people would just come and hang out the studio for hours. You know what I mean? I love that.
We're going to do like a 5-minute thing after we end this, but remind me to come back to that, because I have a question about that in like that type of music, hardcore in particular. Yeah. But you know, like the Sticks and Stones, you know, at least for me, seems to be like, and I think for a lot of people now at the time, seems to be like the modern blueprint for pop punk, especially with newer pop punk bands. And is there a point in your, you know, career where you're like, holy shit, this album might have done way more than what we originally intended? Or when you're like, this is the album we wanted to make at the time, and we knew that how this would impact the world and have its impact on modern pop punk?
Yeah. So no, we didn't know how it was going to impact anything. We were just doing what felt right at the time for us. And to be really honest, like I don't really ever think about it until someone comes up to me and says, dude, that record did XYZ for me. And when I hear that from people, that's when I'm like, shit, man, like this is like, this record is such a big deal for people. And when I hear bands talk about it, and when they talk about how they were influenced by it, or, you know, whatever the case may be, it's really flattering. Cause I don't know. I'm just like here, like with my, you know, going with my kids. I don't know. I just like, it's so weird to think about, you know what I mean? But I appreciate it so much, you know?
It is a strange thing, dude. Cause it's like, I remember when we've been doing this for 10 years, which seems like yesterday we started. And yeah, there are like moments that like, I'll just be doing shit during the day and I'll get a flashback of like, oh my God, dude, that was so fucking sick, or that was so incredible. And there'll never be like a moment in time like that again. There'll be different moments, but there won't be like that moment in, yeah, you know, in particular. And I don't know, I think we're around the same age. And so I always have like a relationship with how I would feel as somebody who is in a rising band, especially on that, like the, you're on fucking MTV, dude. You guys had like the TRL shit. Like that is like, did you, I don't know. I just could never place myself in. I that was where I always wanted. Like I always was like, that's a dream that I'll never obtain it. I was super happy playing to like 100 cap rooms. And I don't know. How did you, was that like a weird situation for you guys? Like, how did you guys navigate that within the band? Were you like, really excited back before you guys went on stage or on like all of these things, or you're like, this is never going to be normal. Like this is not ever going to be like a normal thing for us. Cause you know, we're used to be seeing like celebrities. And now we've got pop punk in mainstream media.
Yeah, totally. I think for us, it was always, I think no matter who you talk to in the band, whether it be me or Chad or Cyrus or whoever, Ian, I think everyone will tell you the same thing, is that we always made it a point to just be the most true to ourselves as we possibly can, whether it's, and even if we're on TRL, if we make music videos, it was always us. It was always Newfound, you know, and maybe if we weren't that, maybe the band would be way bigger right now, but who knows? I mean, I think for us, it was all about like being ourselves, being on the same level as the people that have put us to where we are, and just being like authentic. And that's been our whole thing for since the beginning of the band. So yeah, going on TRL and like having Claire Danes like do a portrait of Ian is like super weird, but it was awesome too, you know? So, I don't know. I think that it's, I think we've always just been ourselves, you know?
I
don't know.
I think Claire Danes might've been one of my first Jacks. Like I like really do think that like maybe she might have been like one of my first ones.
So funny. It was
her and like me, and then Mila Jovovich from in the Fifth Element.
Yeah.
You know, she's wearing that like,
Mila for sure.
Yeah, that was a big one for me.
Yeah. So, Jordan, on the flip side of the coin, I mean, we talked about how important and impactful this album is, like especially in hindsight, like looking back on it now, like. It's obviously launched 1,000 ships of a million other pop punk bands. But at the time when it came out, you know, looking back at like some of the old reviews, it wasn't necessarily received well critically, and people were, you know, pretty harsh in some of these reviews. Was that something that you guys paid attention to? And I think especially too, like coming from legitimate, like credible hardcore bands in that community where they're extremely sort of pretentious, like look at even hardcore Twitter today. Like, how did you guys
crazy
deal with all of that? Did you pay attention to it? Did it bother you, or did you not even give a fuck?
I think it was a little bit of a combination of all of it. When we, you know, because we're only doing the best that we know, you know what I mean? When we went to record that record, we were doing what felt right for us and what we thought sounded awesome and what we knew our fans would love singing along to live and that sort of thing. And I think for a lot of those reviews that came out at the time, you know, like I remember there was some Rolling Stone interview review and it was like these California skate punks. And we're like, what?
What? We moved there a month ago.
Yeah. And it was like these old dudes that just like get a stack of CDs and they have to like basically bust out reviews all day long. And so like for us, it kind of stings a little bit when you're like, man, I just put like my heart and soul into this for like the last 3 months. And like, you're just sitting behind your desk, you know what I mean? But then it kind of just gave us the drive to just like keep doing what we're doing, you know? And I think that really, I feel like if we did it any other way, I don't think we'd be where we are today. Like, I feel like because we stayed true to ourselves, we are still the band that we are. And, you know, we go on tour and we have shows that's, you know, we have sellout tours and people are like stoked. It's crazy because I'll go and on tour and we'll be playing and it's like you see a whole range of ages and ethnicities, and it's just really cool to see. Like, you know, there's some bands that you grew up listening to, and you go to see them play now, and it's like all old people there, and it's boring, and the crowd's boring, and it sucks. But like for whatever reason, our band, like people are just still friggin' like going off. So I don't know,
dude. Is there like okay for. Us, we had like one review when we first started, right? This, and I'm, you know what? Granted, I think that this dude is a good writer. I think he's got good opinions on stuff. I do. I give credit where credit's due. But this motherfucker, like, you know, this dude Dan Ozzie wrote like, and you might know him, but he like wrote this like thing that was like, oh, these guys are like cashing out, selling out, and like doing all this shit, and like whatever the fuck, made a noisy article that actually helped really propel. Our career. Totally. So shout out Dan Ozzie. Thank you for doing the opposite of what you intended to do. You fuck. Even though you are a good writer, I will let you know. And you have good, but also kind of fuck all critics in general. You know what I mean? It's just kind of where I'm at. Is there one thing that like from this album that you're like, ow, dude, that sting? Like, do you remember, do you still think, or do you not? Are you completely, if you can't think of it off the top of your head, that's a good sign.
Yeah, I think that we kind of, what would piss, I know it would, there was some things I remember in some reviews of the record where it was comparing us a lot to bands that were not really, that didn't really come from our, like, how we grew up, you know what I mean? And not throwing shade at any of these bands, but we know we'd be lumped into, like, with Good Charlotte and Sum 41 and, like, Simple Plan and that sometimes, you know what I mean? And that was, I feel like, for reviewers that didn't really know what our background was and knew, like, how we started and where we came from, because, you know, we were all a bunch of hardcore kids that started a pop punk band because it was fun to do, you know what I mean? And so we really grinded. And so I think sometimes that was kind of like, oh man, we're not like that. You know, like we're like, we got heavy guitars, man. Like, you know, I don't know. So.
Dude, you know what? I was going to save this for the like our interview, like just like the couple questions afterwards. But yeah. I feel like this is it's like a relevant, and I think it's something that people would kind of want to know. And I want to know. And, you know, at the time, like I remember pop punk and hardcore being pretty separate. Like, and then they were like, at least where I grew up, I don't know what it was like when you grew up. And I knew it was like very, you know, people were very territorial, and you guys did come from the hardcore world. And I was just, you know, like how were there bands that you really, really liked that you grew up listening to that didn't receive you, that kind of hurt, or where you're like, or was everybody fucking cool? Which is what I would love. That's like what I would have loved.
Yeah. To be honest, I don't really remember any sort of like in that, especially for coming like bands from that world. I don't really remember people being like that much of like assholes. Like, it wasn't until we started playing with like more of like the West Coast, like bands that, there was like this sort of like ego going on. But we came from South Florida where every band would play with because there was nowhere to go and nothing to do. So if you had a band and you were like a metal band and then your friends were in a ska band and were like, okay, let's play a show together. Like that's kind of how we grew up. And that's why Newfound Glory was so, accepted in a lot of circles, especially on the East Coast and down South, was because we would just play with hardcore bands all the time. And knowing that Chad was from a hardcore band himself, and we all, you know, grew up listening to that music, and I don't know, it just sort of all was working at the time. And then I also, for me, like bands that influenced us and sort of helped mold our direction were bands like, you know, Lifetime. You know, Lifetime was is essentially a pop punk band that with hardcore, you know, that was influenced by hardcore as well. You know, we toured with bands like Snapcase. I mean, we did we were in that circle for a long time before we sort of like, crossed over. Is that the right word? I don't know.
Kinda. A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So speaking of Lifetime and some of these New Jersey bands, we have this sort of running theme that we're finding. We're like 16 episodes into this podcast and each one's about a different album. And we're finding sort of within this universe, there's like always a road that leads back to Gabe Saporta. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the Gabe Saporta connection here? Because I believe he was the reason you guys got signed to Drive Thru Records.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you guys meet Gabe and how did that all come about?
So Gabe's brother, Ricky, is a promoter. And so he would promote our shows in Jersey and like at the Elks Lodges and that kind of thing. And so because of Ricky, that's how we met Gabe and like the Midtown guys. And Midtown was already signed to Drive Thru, I believe, at the time. And we had Nothing Gold Could Stay, was our only record at the that had been out around that time frame. Like timelines get a little like jumbled in my head, but it's roughly. And Richard and Stephanie came to see Midtown play at some point and they had Nothing Gold Could Stay. And Gabe was like, you got to listen to this band. And that's kind of how that started. He gave Richard and Stephanie our Nothing Gold Could Stay CD. That sounds like it was recorded in a dumpster. And like, you know, just they've hit us up later on Sauce play at a pool party. And yeah, just so weird.
This is history.
Yeah.
Dude, it is the, I don't know this is like a, like if you feel this way, but I feel like Midtown should have been.
Yeah, for
like
sure.
It's like they're one of my all time favorites. And sometimes I like will talk to people that are like very like they know everything about this fucking thing. And they're like, I never really listened to Midtown. I'm like, you're fucking up, dude. They yeah. were like the kid. You know what? Like they, I don't, did they like influence you to do, start doing like a little bit more harmonies and shit?
Oh, yeah.
Cause they are the best. They're the best.
When that Trombino record came out and Richard and Stephanie played it for us, we're like, what the fuck? Like, like how does this sound so good? And what is up with like all these crazy three part harmonies? And it was awesome. Yeah, man. And I like, you know, we toured together a lot back then. And I remember the first time I ever met those dudes, I was working at Walgreens. And we were starting our tour together. We were all both in vans and stuff. And I remember them coming into Walgreens with maybe Ian or somebody. And I was like at the checkout counter and I was like, whoa, Midtown's here. Like just so stoked.
Hell yeah.
They
yeah.
did give off like rock star at the time. Then they were like yeah. really, really, really did.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, as far as this album goes, like it was a humongous influence on me. It was a humongous influence on my friends and my sister and everybody around me. And you know, I as all of your albums were, but this one was like one of the ones where I remember opening up the cover and read like or the CD booklet and reading it over and over and over again. So you know, thank you for everything that you have done to for my life and Emo Night and everything in the scene. And you guys are thank you.
Hell yeah, man. Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, Jordan, thank you so much for being on CD Burners. We're going to hop over now to Patreon and we're going to ask you just a few more questions there. Guys, if you're listening and you want to hear the rest of our interview with Jordan, head on over to patreon.com/emonight and we'll see you soon.